Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to the podcast. I am jumping out of my skin to introduce my friend, Liz Earnshaw, to you. Liz is a very well-renowned therapist with a massive Instagram following, a thriving practice. She's the author of a best-selling book and a new future-to-be best-selling book. So Liz practices Gottman. She's the founder of A Better Life Therapy. Liz, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited. So tell, how did you get into the work that you're doing? I know you're a new mom. Well, you're not a new mom, but you're a married entrepreneur, two kids.
And the second is new. So newish mom, the second. Yeah. So I got into couples therapy kind of randomly, actually. I went to school to be a teacher and I was terrible with classroom management. So when I graduated, I didn't know what I was going to do with my life because I certainly could not be a teacher. And I was driving down a highway and there was a billboard advertising a couples therapy program. And I thought, this is a great way for me not to have to go into the real world yet. I'm going to do more grad school.
I love it.
And that's truly, and I got into that program, thank God, because I actually ended up immediately realizing that that was what I was supposed to do with my life. So it was very random, never in the plan to be a therapist, always wanted to work with people. But couples therapy immediately, it was like the best thing I've ever done.
Wow. And what kind of couples do you work with from a relationship issue standpoint?
Yeah, so I work with couples who come in with all sorts of issues, but I would say that the majority of couples I see, the underlying issue has to do with some sort of stress in their lives. So they're either part of the sandwich generation where they're caregiving to their parents and caregiving young children. Is that you?
For those of you who aren't watching this on video, I might have raised my hand immediately.
Might have raised your hand. And a lot of people listening might be raising their hands because so many people are part of that right now. And so they're navigating the stress of jobs, partners, kids, parents, money, all sorts of things at once. They might be going through some other stressor, like somebody has been sick for a long time. They lost a job. They've just had babies, you know, whatever it is. But I tend to work with a lot of people who are going through something that's pretty difficult to navigate. And because of that, they're having conflict.
And do you also see singles as well?
I do see singles. So I work with individuals and couples. My focus is relationship issues. So usually when individuals come to see me, it's because they are trying to figure out what to do about relationships, whether they're dating and they're like, what is going on? Am I insane? Because the dating world is crazy right now. Or if they're in a relationship, they're trying to figure out like, do I want to stay in this or not?
You know, when singles come to you, what do you find? I mean, stress is ubiquitous, right? I mean, and it's so true that you say stress is the biggest issue. What are some of the stresses that you see single people facing? And then let's transition that into couples also. I would love your perspectives.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, single people, they face all the same stressors. They're facing stressors with money, with their jobs, with their aging parents, maybe. But I think that there's this other layer of stressors that has to do, if they want a relationship, that has to do with desiring a relationship. Yeah. And so that might have to do with decision making. So when I'm meeting with individuals, if they're single, but they want a relationship, there's a lot of stress around what do I do if I don't meet somebody about kids? I really want kids. So they have to make these decisions. Like, do I just decide I'm not going to have kids? Do I decide that maybe I'll go and do it on my own? If I don't have children, how do I cope with the pain of that grief? Because I want them, you know, if that's their experience. I think another stressor is where do I want to be in life? So that comes up a lot. You know, I want to date, but I also just got this opportunity. And should I move again for a job? Should I upend my life again? And there will be a lot of conversations around if I do that, then am I making it hard to date me because I'm all over the place? And then, of course, just the stress of dating. It's really unpleasant often when.
That's very well said. I'm sure you smart daters out there are like going beep, beep, snap, snap. I feel that.
Yeah. So, I mean, working with, I'm so lucky. I met my husband on Tinder when Tinder was new, but working with people who are dating right now, I'm like, I'm so glad that I stay up to date with it and that I'm hearing what's going on now, because if I wasn't, I don't know that I would believe it. You know, I'd write it off and be like, there's no way that people are acting that way, or there's no way it's that hard. It's really challenging right now. And so there's so much stress and anxiety around, like, why are people not calling me back? Am I really that terrible? Or why do I keep dating people for 2 months and then they ghost me? And I'm meeting with people who are like wonderful humans who I would try to introduce to my friends if I could, and yet they're struggling to meet people. And so those are some of the unique stressors that they face. Financial for singles, you know, their friends are getting married and buying houses and all of this stuff because they have combined finances. And a lot of singles are feeling kind of left in the dust. Like, how am I ever going to afford a house if it's just my income? So a lot of stressors.
You know, with some of our clients, to your point, that have come through divorce, one of the biggest stressors that we hear about from them, I mean, obviously divorce is terrible, right? You don't get divorced because things were great. It's a long fire-based tunnel that people walk through. But one of the biggest stressors is losing a lot of friends and being abandoned by couples that you were friends with. And so I hear this all the time. Like, I have to go out and make a whole new set of friends because suddenly my married friends think divorce is contagious, or they just don't invite me to the barbecues. They don't invite me to the couples dinners.
They don't want to be involved with picking sides or.
Yeah. It's like, please invite me. So my PSA to couples is always invite your single friends. And if they don't want to come, they'll say no, but give them the invite.
Right. Right. Yes. And even if they're not divorced single friends, again, that feeling of being left in the dust, you know, and if you can't see me, I'm putting like the quotes up because you're not really like you still have your own vibrant life. But I think sometimes there's that feeling of everybody's getting married and now they're just doing married things. It's baby showers and wedding showers and buying new houses. And like, here I am and I want those things. And yet they're kind of like creating their own lives outside of me and I'm not included anymore. And when I am included, it sometimes can hurt because I'm not in that place, right? So there's a lot of stressors for people who are single.
Yeah, there really are, right? This lack of being included, right? Being left out, I think, is a big deal. I mean, I love the work that we're able to do with singles to help, you know, fix pickers. I always say it's not because you're broken, but sometimes the people that we're picking aren't good for us and they're the likely ones to ghost and they don't have, you know, they haven't done the work on themselves. Their attachment systems are still in flux. So all of those things. So we help to make it more ideally less stressful for people when they come through our practice.
Well, it sounds like you try to give them specific things that they can look at so that it doesn't all feel just like chaos. I think for a lot of singles, it just feels like I have no control here. There's nothing I can do to change the situation. But I think what you're talking about is can't control it all, but here are some things like you could change and you could control.
Yeah. And there is a way to make dating a hell of a lot less stressful, right? It's like, It's like if you wanted to go learn how to golf, right? I don't golf, so I can really poignantly imagine myself. And I have tons of friends that do golf. So part of me is like, God, I'd really love to learn how to golf. But I certainly wouldn't decide I was going to go play 9 or 18 with them right. without having a guide by my side. And ideally, having had, you know, weeks or months of lessons so I could at least keep up with them. And in the dating world, it's very much the same thing. Before you actually hit the waters of dating, to have that kind of coaching, consulting, and the guides on your shoulders make it a lot less stressful, because anything we do from a place of fear doesn't lead to a good decision usually.
Almost never, unless it's like an emergency situation and you need to like run.
Unless the tiger's coming, unless the tiger's coming. Right, go into fight or flight, that's great. But there aren't that many tigers, or, you know, a car is about to hit you when you're on a bike, that's great. You know, having those instant reflexes save us, right? It's not even fear at that moment, right? It's our limbic systems that are like, get out of the way. We're like, how did I just duck? Who knows? So super interesting. I would, you know, when people get into relationships, you know, and maybe we can talk about even the early phases of being a couple. What do you see as stressors if people come to you? I don't know. Do they come to you in the beginning phases of dating? Or is it usually kind of midpoint or after the wheels have fallen off?
So it's interesting and it's generational. I see a lot of people who are like Gen Z or like younger millennials. They do come when they're dating.
I love that.
Yeah. I've been working as a couples therapist for 15 years now. And I would say like the last few years, I've noticed a lot of couples in their 20s, they come and they don't have any problems. You know, it's really cute. And they'll say, I know what my stuff is. They know what their stuff is. And so we kind of just want to come here so that you can point out to us where we should have conversations and what we should look out for. But I would say that millennial, Gen X, boomers, they come after the wheels have fallen off usually, or when they're starting to fall off.
Yeah.
But when I see people towards the beginning, the stressors that they're usually facing have to do most often with some sort of transitory point. So people usually don't feel stressors with each other, and if it's a healthy relationship, until there's some sort of big transition, right? So it might be like somebody has to move, somebody has like a more demanding job all of a sudden, they're starting to decide, should we get married? Should we move in together? Somebody's parent has died, something like that. That's usually when I see people early on. Sometimes I see them early on if there's a lot of fighting. Usually that's not such a great sign early in the relationship, because most people are showing their best selves early in a relationship. So doesn't tend to happen. But usually I see them at transition points.
So let's go there. When there's fighting early in a relationship, I know you're also Gottman trained. Right. So tell me about what kind of fights are healthy and what kind of fights should red flag us?
So everybody argues. Everyone 100%. Fights. You know, if I use the word fight, some people might hear that in a more aggressive framing, but everybody argues and disagrees. And actually, it's healthy. If you don't, that might mean that you are in a one down position, or that you're too afraid to speak up, too afraid of what it would mean to argue. So arguing in itself can be really, really healthy and a sign that you're comfortable with another person enough to really say what you think, even when it's different. Arguing becomes problematic when we start to see something called the four horsemen. And so the four horsemen, you're nodding your head because I think that you know what they are too, but their criticism, defensiveness, stonewalling, and contempt. And I even remember back to when I was dating, sometimes I would go on dates with people who would utilize these things like in the first few dates. And that's, for anybody listening, it's kind of like a red flag. You don't really necessarily want to be dealing with that early on. But let's say that you're arguing, you're having these arguments where these four horsemen exist. Criticism is when you're pointing fingers. So somebody is saying something like, you never, you always, you are selfish. You never get here on time. You're always distracted, any of those things. Defensiveness is when you don't take responsibility for your part. So the way this might look in dating, and maybe you have some examples too, is if you say to somebody, hey, you know, it's really important to me that when we're spending time together, that we're doing X, Y, and Z. I don't know, whatever you would say.
Okay. Or
it's really important to me that if we say we're meeting at 8 p.m., that we're meeting at 8 p.m. When you change the time on me all the time, it's a little frustrating. If the person responds with defensiveness, they are not going to take responsibility for that. They're going to say, I have a busy job, or why are you being so difficult? Or I didn't realize that you were such an inflexible person, or you're right, but da 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 da. You really want to look for somebody who's willing to say, you're totally right about that. We said we were going to meet at 8 o'clock. I take accountability. I kind of suck at time, but I'm going to work on that for you. But defensiveness is one of the four horsemen. The third is stonewalling. Stonewalling is when you bring up an issue and the other person won't talk about it. And so again, in dating, what this might look like is maybe you say, hey, I've noticed something as like kind of off between the two of us. We used to see each other more frequently. Now we're seeing each other less. And all of a sudden they stop texting you back, or they just won't respond to that. And then a week later, they're like, hey, how are you? What's up? Do you want to hang out? They just don't want to deal with the frustrating conversation. And then contempt is the worst of all four. Contempt is when we're taking a one-up position. And so it's kind of disgust and disdain and sarcasm. It might be when you're dating someone, you say you like something and they're like, oh, ugh, really? I didn't peg you for that type of person, or something like that. And so you want to look for those four things early on in a relationship. And if they're coming up in your discussions a lot, it's something that you're going to either want to work on or decide, do I want to take that as information that maybe this relationship is already off to a pretty difficult start?
Yeah, I love that. And just to put this into perspective, I love the Four Horsemen, and I think that it's so spot on. And the godfather of this, Dr. John Gottman, had Love Labs out in Seattle, where he looked at thousands and thousands of couples and thousands of hours of footage of video asking couples, and correct me if I'm wrong, one question that would spark his analysis. Tell me about a challenge that you're having in your marriage. And the video cameras would be on. And this dude, Dr. Gottman, got so good at this that he could look at 5 to 10 seconds of video footage and predict with 95% accuracy if this couple would stay together or get divorced.
That's correct. He could do that. And one thing I say about that is don't let that scare you, because there's a caveat. They will get divorced if they don't fix it.
I love that you just said that. And it's so fixable if you both want to fix
fixable.
It.
And so these couples in the study, they weren't fixing it, right? Like they were observed and then they were followed without knowing what the four, you know, that wasn't the period of time where they were going over that. And so now what we know is that these things are really toxic to relationships, and that if they are not changed, the relationship will end, either actually end through a breakup or end through withdrawal. You're married, you're together, but you don't talk, you don't hang out, you don't like each other. And so these things can change and they can get better if you're willing to improve them.
I love that. So let's flip the script now. Let's say to ourselves, dear listener and me and all of us, like, am I exhibiting the Four Horsemen? What could I be doing? So if I hear myself saying something critical, let's say to my husband, like, I'm trying to think of, I'm sure I do it all the time.
I do it all the time.
Right. And right now I'm on the spot. I'm like, wow, what do I say? It's like, wow, Yeah, I don't like it when you leave wet towels on the carpet. Sorry, Andy, if you're listening, right?
My husband is Andy too.
Oh my God, no way. Okay, sorry, Andy's. So that's critical. No, maybe, is that critical? I don't
actually
like
isn't.
When you do that. That's not critical. It's you always leave your towels on the ground, even though I've told you 500 times not to do that. That's
I'll tell you the
critical.
Difference between complaint, criticism, contempt, because they're all kind of similar. Complaint is, I really don't like it when you leave the towels on the floor. Or, oh my gosh, this house is such a mess. What do we do? Complaints are fine. You're supposed to complain. It would be weird to have no complaints in a relationship. Criticism sounds like you, every time I come home, you've left the house a mess. Mm-hmm. Every time.
Every time. Where
you always leave these towels on the floor. You always leave them. You never pick them up. You never want to help me. It's taking the problem of the towel. That's your complaint that towels are on the floor. It's taking the problem of the mess. Your complaint is there's a mess. And it's saying this is actually about your character defect. You have a defect in who you are. The third is contempt. Contempt is criticism supercharged. Contempt is if you said, and these are very like ouch things to say, but if you said something like, of course you effing left that towel on the floor again. Good thing your mom's dead. She would be ashamed of you, right? Or the house is a mess again. Who would be surprised by that, right, kids? Daddy always leaves the house a mess. So it's when we take a stance of, I'm better than you. And not only do you have a character defect, but you're beneath me. So criticism is still, we're on the same field, but I think you're defective. Contempt is, we're not even on the same playing field. I'm above you, you're beneath me, and you should be ashamed of yourself. And then complaint is, we're the same playing field, we've got a problem, and I actually respect you enough that we're gonna figure it out together. I'm not going to put you down.
Oh, I love that. And becoming aware of these things, ladies and gentlemen, can do more for us and all of our relationships. Because typically, if you're likely to throw horsemen down in a romantic relationship, it's not just limited to that one. Is that true?
That is true. Andy. And all have our go-to, right? Like my go-to is for sure criticism. When I am frustrated with my husband, I'm sure when I was dating people in the past, I criticize, you know, oh, you always do that. Or why are you always the last one out of the house? Or whatever it is. And I can go to contempt even. Maybe not the ones I gave as an example, but I can go to the point where I would say, like, this is just how you grew up. I do that stuff, right? Like
100% guilty as charged.
No wonder, you know, I don't even know why I ask you about the dishes anymore. That's just how you grew up. I say things like that. That's contempt. It is my go-to. And it's my go-to when I get mad at other people too. I have more of a boundary with other people, but in my head, I'm being critical. She always does that. She always cancels plans, blah, 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 blah. If defensiveness is your go-to, it's probably your go-to in most places. So defensiveness, we didn't really give an example of that, would be if you said to Andy, you just complained. You didn't even criticize. You just said, oh, come on, these towels are on the floor again. And it really upsets me when there's towels on the floor. If Andy responded with, well, you know what else is on the floor? Your shoes. So if you're going to complain about my towels, why don't you ever put your shoes where they're supposed to be? Or I'll actually give you a real example from this morning.
You and I are getting real. We're just rolling it up. Like, let's just play our lives out there because we have problems too.
Yeah, we all have problems too. But here, I like to show, like, these are real examples. And then I'm going to give you an example of how to fix it. So this morning, we were looking for my son's baseball pants. And I, you know, my husband said everything is on the dresser. It wasn't baseball pants. It was some other type of pants. And I said to my husband, these aren't baseball pants. Now, he took that as a criticism. It wasn't, it truly, it genuinely, sometimes it is. That time it was not. He was inaccurate. But he took it as a criticism and he got defensive. And so if you get defensive, it might sound something like, I couldn't find the baseball pants. You know what, though? It's because you're always mixing up all the clothes in the different laundry baskets. That's what he said to me. So that was his defensiveness. He punted a complaint back at me. And then it just goes from there. Because then I say, well, I'm the only one that does the laundry.
Of course I am, because that's how you grew up, in a house that was a mess. Yeah. There comes the contempt.
Of course, it's all mixed up because you don't help me with the laundry. So I just do my best. That's how it could get. But you know what? Because I'm aware, I caught myself as I was about to say, that's because I had it in my head. I wanted to say, that's because the way that you help me with laundry is not very helpful and blah, 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 blah. But what I said was, you know what? You're right. The baseball, they're mixed up. Everything is mixed up. Our laundry is a disaster. It wasn't about him. And so when this cycle happens, something really powerful is if you can recognize it's happening and choose to do something else instead. I could have easily stuck in this criticism defensiveness thing. And instead, I heard his defensiveness and I just picked out the one thing that was true. And I said, you're right.
The laundry is a mess.
It is. I was like, you're right. I have no idea where the baseball pants are. It is all over the place. And then, you know, he was able to make a joke and we split out of it. But if I wouldn't have been aware, we would have kept going and our morning would have been ruined. But we fixed our morning pretty quickly because luckily this time it was me who recognized what was happening. He's actually usually pretty good at recognizing it. But if you can do that, you can really change the dynamic pretty quickly.
And that requires emotional regulation, right? And looking at yourself.
Yes. And so the book that I have coming out in September, Till Stress Do Us Part, is it's all about the fact that a lot of the couples I work with, they're not miscommunicating. Well, they're miscommunicating, but they're not having these significant blowouts because they don't know this stuff. It's because they're not regulated enough to be able to use what they know. And so you can know about the four horsemen, but if you're feeling dysregulated, it's really hard to stop yourself because you're actually having a physiological response that's making it difficult to control impulses. It's making it difficult to show affection, humor, all of those things that we need. And so if we're thinking about singles, even if you find that maybe you stonewall when somebody brings something up to you while you're dating, that's not because you're a jerk. You're going to be perceived as a jerk for doing it, but it's most likely because you're physiologically overwhelmed. And what that means is something about that conversation stressed you out. And so the way to deal with the stonewalling in that example is that you have to be able to calm yourself down enough to have the conversation. If my husband and I this morning had 80 other stressors going on, I would have had a bad response, even though I know all of this stuff. Let's say that I got an email from work that really made me angry. And then he said, it's because you never do the laundry the right way. My response would have not been, you're right, I can't find the baseball pants. My response would have been, you've got to be effing kidding me. You do it yourself. Da, 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 da. And it's all because of self-regulation.
Wow. Well, tell us about the book and tell us about self-regulation. I know you've talked about these internal and external stressors and are like, tell us about the difference here and, you know, tell us some exciting things from the book, because we're all going to want to pre-order this book when you give us some of these little tips and hacks and these amazing gems that you're already giving us. So I'm so excited for this.
So there's two types of stress that a couple experiences. One is external. External are the stressors that are on the outside. So work, in-laws, the traffic, the fact that you're watching traumatic news every single day, whatever it is. These are the things that are coming at you and they're taking your self-regulation all day. So you're dealing all day with like, I have to be buttoned up. I have to deal with this boss. I have to deal with the traffic. I have to, all of these things. Internal stressors are the stressors that you experience with your partner. We're arguing, we're not having sex. They seem off. They seem disappointed in me. We can't agree on what we're supposed to do with our money or our kids or whatever it is. So external outside of you in the relationship, internal between the two of you. What tends to happen is that when couples have a lot of stress in the external world, they have something called stress spillover. And stress spillover is when all of that stress starts spilling into the relationship. And the reason it starts spilling in is because all of our regulation skills get used up by what we're dealing with all day long. And so then we come home and we have no regulation left. We have no ability to cope left. If you think about yourselves as gas tanks, you've used all of the fuel to deal with the cable representative on the phone for 2 hours, to deal with what's going on at the doctor's office, to deal with the fact that you didn't have enough money in the bank to pay your employee. You've dealt with all of that. And then you come home and your partner gives you a look or says something you don't like, and there's a minor internal stress, just a minor one. But because you've run out of all of your self-regulation fuel, you start to argue with each other. And the arguments become more and more heated. When, if none of that stuff was going on the thing that happened internally probably actually wouldn't be that big of a deal.
Yeah, it's so true. So, so true. And, you know, I can say I'm guilty for so many of these things. And
me too.
And one of the things that I find that has been that it, and it's so logical, and yet it's, when something flares up, right, with my husband and me, or even with one of my kids, it is taking that pause and saying, I'm pausing right now because I need to go collect myself and kind of just like get to a better place. I'm not quitting you. I'm not quitting this, but I'm just going to take a pause because I need it. It's like putting yourself in time out.
Yes.
We have this agreement between the four humans that live in this house that we're able to take that pause. It has been, Liz, it's been game changing. And it's when we don't take the pause. And I can tell you, and I think if my husband was sitting here with us, Andy, he's been on my podcast, when something flares up, it could be him and the kids or him and me, now I will immediately go to survival. And I know what's going to make me feel better because I've repeated this so many times, which is the pause. But at that moment, he won't have the ability to say, I need a pause. I'm like, time out. We're done. Or the two of you need to pause and go back to your corners right now, physically separating in different rooms, not on the same side of the room. I want different floors, different rooms. You go outside, you stay inside. 30 minutes. Unbelievable forced regulation.
You know, Terry Real says something that I really like. Terry Real is a couples therapist, and he has really amazing work. But he says that timeouts are the only unilateral thing in a relationship. And what he means by that is that a timeout is the only thing you're going to do without permission from your partner or your kids or whoever it is, right? Like anything else you would say, can we talk about this? Can we negotiate on it? Can we da 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 da? When it's a relational thing, obviously not everything in your life, but a timeout is unilateral because you have to do it even if the other person doesn't want you to do it, because there's such a state of dysregulation that the other person is not going to make a good choice about what they're going to do in that moment. And the other thing I thought you said that was really interesting, that there's just a fun fact associated with, is you said, we need to take 30 minutes. And I think you said that because you know that when we are hijacked by stress chemicals, it actually takes 20 to 30 minutes for those hormones to dump out of our bloodstream. And so you do need to take a break for at least 30 minutes, because otherwise you are in a flooded state. And when you're in a flooded state, you become myopic, which means you get hyper-focused on one specific thing. So you're focused on the towel on the floor. You're focused on how the person doesn't help with the laundry. You're focused on blah, 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 blah. And so there's no wiggle room for conversation, and you become self-serving. So when you are in a stressed state, that makes sense. You need to protect yourself if a lion is chasing you. But in a relationship, that doesn't help. And so it's very hard when you're in that state to take a break, because you're like, we need to talk about this. I want this now. And, you know, I need what I want in this moment. So the other person who is less flooded has to be able to say, I'm gonna scream at everybody right now if you don't leave me alone. So I'm walking out of this room. And it is such a game changer.
Yeah, it really is. And it makes things softer. And usually one person apologizes to the other in that 30 minutes, because we have let go of all of that. It's stopped, and we have a minute to come back to our senses and look at, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
This happens with my husband and me almost habitually now. We take a break. I'm the one that calls the break. He's like, whoa. I'm like, we're going to pause. And then within 30 minutes, no matter whose fault it was, we both were in that dance. It's like, I'm really sorry for having left the towel on the ground. And it's like, and I'm really sorry for not having said it in the right way.
Or like saying it to you while you're in, like, well, I already know that you just got off of a phone call that was really stressful. Like, that wasn't the best time, right? Like, totally. We can always take accountability for the way that we played into the dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how you said something earlier about how we may have these tendencies, and we do this a lot with our romantic partners, but we have more boundaries with the way we deal with other people. Oftentimes, the people that we feel the safest with are the people that we feel the safest with to just dysregulate, right? And so realizing that this person was once someone that you weren't that close to, right? And so...
Ring.
That was actually, funnily enough, my husband. I'm sure the vibes in the universe were like,
yeah, he's like,
you're talking about me with Liz, aren't you? She's got an Andy and I've got an Andy. And so I lost my train of thought on that, but that's okay.
We were talking about like how, you know, you can come back to something and just take responsibility for your part. And when you get that space for a moment,
yeah,
those stress hormones start to dissipate, and it gives you an opportunity to see the whole picture. Remember I said, when you're under stress, the picture gets small.
Yeah, hyperfixation.
When the stress starts to be reduced, the picture gets big. And in relationships, you need a big picture. If you have a small picture in relationships, you're inflexible, you're difficult, and you're not going to have good conversations. If you have a big picture, you can be flexible, you can negotiate, you can hear the other person's side, you can have your own limits while still respecting the limits of others. So you need that time so that your picture can get big again.
If you're having a conversation, Liz, we were also talking about like people that aren't that close to us and how we can hold boundaries for them. And it just came back to me. If we, let's say we're in a conversation that's stressful with somebody from work, whether it for you could be a client, whether it could be, oh my God, my phone.
You're popular.
I mean, good Lord. Here I am losing my train of thought again. If we're having a conversation that is stressful, let's say with our boss, or how do we, is there a way to stay, like, how do we hit pause on that without seeming disrespectful? Like, I feel like if we could craft this here in 5 minutes, we could change the world, Liz.
Yeah, take beta blockers. No, I'm just kidding.
Like, chill the F out. Like,
take a beta blocker before going into the meeting with your boss. I'm kidding. I'm not prescribing you anything.
like I could, but can we say to people, can we normalize starting to say, hey, I really respect you and this conversation. I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed and I want to come back to my normal state when I can give this some thought and respond in a really healthy, regulated way. Is that possible?
Beautiful. You just said it beautifully. Yes, I think a few things. If you're starting, so I always tell people, if you know you get dysregulated during those types of things, think about 10 steps before the worst moment. So the worst moment is when you start to hear the ringing in your ears. You feel like you can't get the words out that you wanted to say to your boss. You almost feel like you're in a fog. You're not really processing anymore. What were you like 10 steps before it got to that point? If you can start to recognize, you know what happens in the beginning is my heart starts to race a little bit, or I start to get the prickly feeling on my neck, or I start to feel hot. That's the moment where you want to do this thing where you're saying, I'm getting overwhelmed. You want to stop it as your heart rate is going up. You want to stop it as you're becoming flooded instead of waiting until you get flooded. I think a lot of us were like, I can just get through this. I can get through it. And then you get flooded and it doesn't end well. If you're a fight type of person, you say something snappy that you regret. If you are a flight type of person, you might just like kind of leave the conversation. If you freeze, you don't say anything at all. And it just kind of happens in front of you. So you want to
fawn, you'll just start saying sorry 1,000 times.
Sorry, or I agree. Sure, no problem. I'll take less money, whatever it is. And so you want to learn, what are my early stress signs? My heart starts racing. My stomach gets clenched. I start to feel sweaty. And that's when you want to say something like, I feel like there's a lot for me to think over with what we're talking about. Would you mind if I go think about it and we find another time to meet? Or there's a lot that I'm kind of processing right now with this conversation. I would love if I could talk to you tomorrow about it a little bit more. Now, if you have somebody that keeps pushing it, so you've started to notice your stress signals, you're saying, I know I need a break because we talked about this idea of all these stress hormones are going into my body. I'm not going to be able to communicate well. And the person pushes you. That's really hard. Your boss says, well, I'd really like to have the conversation right now. What do you do? Right? It's really, really challenging. And this is where it's so important that you started that early when you first noticed those stress signals, because then what you can say is, it's just not going to be a good conversation if we have it right now, because I haven't gotten to think through it. I would really like us to take a break. I would really like us to take a break. And so you can keep being that broken record. I tell people a lot, when you're in that stress state, be a broken record. You don't need to be creative. You don't need to come up with other things. You can keep just saying, I'm overwhelmed. I'd really like a break. I need to process it. Could we talk tomorrow? You don't have to be creative. And I think that that's really important, especially when it's a relationship that's not an intimate relationship, that you can just keep repeating what it is.
Right. I'm overwhelmed. Could we press pause on this and come back to this tomorrow or tonight?
Could I think about it overnight?
Think about it.
You don't feel comfortable sharing your feelings. You know, I work with a lot of people in law, and if I told them to say something like that to somebody at their firm, they would say, Liz, you've got to be nuts. You don't have to share your feelings. You can just share what you're going to do, right? So, oh, okay, that's a lot to think on. I'm going to take the night to think on it. So depending where you work, you might say, I'm feeling overwhelmed with this information, or it might not be safe to share feelings. So you might just say something like, you know, thank you for sharing that. I'm going to take the night to think about it. I just wanted to put that out there because I know some people are in professions where they're like, no way, I could never say something overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I love that. And I love this whole conversation. I wish we could, you know, have an 8-part series with you, and we'll certainly bring you back on when your book launches. But tell us about both of your books and your new book and like all of the places we can find you.
Yeah. So the easiest place to find me is my name, ElizabethEarnshaw.com, or Instagram at Liz Listens. My first book is called I Want This to Work, and it is really a handbook on relationships. So it talks to you about how do you navigate arguments, how do you navigate the mental load, how do you build rituals, how do you really build a strong, functioning, fulfilling relationship. And my second book is called Till Stress Do Us Part. And that book is about helping couples who have so much going on in their lives recognize that if that wasn't there, they would love each other, they'd be happy, they'd be communicating better because they're smart people. They know they shouldn't be saying these things. But I talk about all the reasons that they're struggling to do what they know they should do. And then I give very clear ideas on how to change that in your life. So, and that comes out September 9th, but it's available now for pre-order.
Oh my gosh, amazing. I'm going to definitely put that link in the show notes and order her book and order both books. I mean, it sounds like even if you're single, right, and you're out there in the dating pool, number one, if you need help, obviously come to Smart Dating Academy because we will hold your hand through this. But as you think about the long game and wanting the relationship to work, I think grabbing both of Liz's books will definitely change your life. I can't wait to read them. And I'm so honored and grateful that you came on the show today to share your wisdom with us. So thank you so much and for tolerating the ringing of my phone.
I loved it. It just shows how sought out you are for all of your amazing nuggets of information. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my gosh, you're so welcome. All right, smart daters, take some psychotic optimism from this episode. There are so many things you could be doing to building up like the happiness and the joy in your own life, and so many things you can do to change and to grow and to how you can think about things and how you can think about yourself. Life is this journey that gets really lifey sometimes. And if it's getting really lifey in your dating world and you need some help, you know where to find us. But look at all the good that exists in your life. And I'll leave you with this week. Try and express affection for 3 people a day this week and see how you start to feel, because it's going to have you start to look for what's good in the relationships that are going well. So, little nugget. So until our next episode, we'll see you next time. Thanks again, Liz.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love, follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.